And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, folks? Welcome to episode 81 of the Fanboy Garage. It is good to have you guys here with us again for another week of awesomeness. It was Super Bowl weekend, so there's lots of things to cover, lots of trailers, tidbits, kind of sneaked out during the big game. There was a Fast and Furious Friday or something going on. They made a big deal. They had a concert. Who'd have thought?
Yeah.
And then we'll talk a little bit about the streaming wars. Chris, I barely made it on tonight because a stomach bug has been ravaging my house.
Ah.
Wife had it last week, and I got it over the weekend. And yeah, it's been a long road to recovery. So I am I'm glad to be here, though.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, thankfully you're here, and
I'm here.
Those
I'm
stomach bugs, man.
Dude, they're the worst.
They are.
They are the worst. And the thing is, it becomes like a mental game. You know, I hate throwing up. I hate throwing up.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, man, you ain't going to do it. Nah.
Oh, so you mean you actually like fight?
Oh, dude, I fight it
with yourself to not do it.
Fight it hard.
Because, I mean, most people, I don't know that a lot of people like throwing up, but like you actually like, you fight the whole concept.
Yeah, I'm like, nah, you're not feeling it.
Got it.
Make it come out your butt.
Oh.
Wow. Anyways. So.
No, I don't. There's good. No so from that. Yeah. You don't just. That's good. And on that note, box office. Yeah, it just can't. It doesn't work as a transition.
No. Yeah. No, it's not. Unless we were talking about a crap ass movie.
All right.
So, I mean, was there much happening in the box office?
No, I mean, it's the same stories, basically. So, you know, like Bad Boys for Life was one again.
Awesome.
17.5 million. So it's still dropping. Like it was 48% drop. So it's under 50% drops. It, you know, it's getting close to 150 million domestic. It's getting close to 300 million worldwide. And, you know, Jumanji, the next level, and another light drop, 22%, $6 million for that. It's heading towards, it's 291.5 million domestic. It's heading, you know, it's going to do well over 300 million. Domestic, it's 756 million worldwide, so you know, good stuff there. And of course, you know, Rise of Skywalker, it's starting to really lose theaters now, so now is where you're going to start to see. So while it was only a 42% drop, but you're still going to start to see a lot, the drops are going to be, you know, coming because the theater count's just going to be
right
down. So it's 3.2 million. It's so it's at 507 million domestic, and it's 1.58 million billion worldwide.
Past,
so it it's crept past Rogue One. So at least that happened. It still doesn't look like it's going to top the domestic total of Rogue One, because it's 16 million short right now, approximately.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, the movie's fading fast, so. Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, we've been over all that.
It's funny. So when that news broke over over the weekend, when I was like laying on my deathbed, I was watching people say, oh, it, you know, it's so much for being a flop, like so much for being a failure. And I'm like, right. Yeah, technically. You're right. I mean, a $1 billion movie.
Yeah, I've
great.
Been seeing that. Yeah, that's that. You know.
But you can't say it's not a disappointment. You can't.
I don't even know that you can't say it's not a failure. You know, I mean, we've had this conversation before. I mean, you know, this is a movie that potentially, you know, with the budget, if the budget was $375 million and you add in marketing costs and you factor in theater splits.
Yeah.
I mean, do you expect to barely make a profit on a Star Wars film?
I mean.
If it even did make one, you know.
Totally. I mean, that stuff aside.
Yeah.
The fact, you know, and we've talked about this at length, but the fact that this was the close of a 40-year saga.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have thought that people would have come out in droves to see this film.
And considering how much fan service, you know, played and how much it was geared towards, like, the people who didn't necessarily love The Last Jedi, like, you would have assumed that, yeah, I mean, for the movie to barely have outgrossed Rogue One worldwide. I mean, that's the narrative. So, look, we can change narratives and make them whatever we want, right? We could revise history, too. I mean, I say this all the time. Like, you cannot tell me that if I would have told you 6 months ago that The Rise of Skywalker, the final film in this trilogy, would barely beat out Rogue One at the box office, you would have thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
There was not a single person that would have taken that bet, probably. And but now it's happened. So now, you know, look, I get it. Some people don't want to be negative, and some people don't also want to admit that, you know, maybe there's something wrong.
Right.
But so they're going to say, well, oh, yeah, it's not really a failure. You say it's a failure, but it's not. And it's a billion. No, look, let's talk facts. This is the final movie in a trilogy, in a Star Wars trilogy, the final movie in a 40-year saga. It's a final movie in a trilogy that started off with, you know, over $2 billion at the worldwide box office.
Right, right.
And then dropped down to 1.3, and people lost their minds over that, right? Mm-hmm. And now this thing, not even going to get to 1.1 billion. And, you know, again, barely beating out Rogue One, which was a side story. Now, granted, Rogue One got the benefit of being the first Star Wars thing after The Force Awakens, right, which was a cultural phenomenon. And it had great marketing with Vader and all that stuff. We've talked about that endlessly. But, yeah, I mean, it still was a side story. It still wasn't a movie that everyone had to go out and see, technically. As much as, I mean, I love the movie, but... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we could talk over and over again about this thing and why it's... But, I mean, to me...
I think about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean...
I really do. And it's not... You know, that sounds crazy. Aaron, why are you thinking about Star Wars films, like, over and over again?
I think we've established that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. And yeah, I can't help but think that the residual success of The Last Jedi was predicated on the fact that it was the JJ mystery box, right? So people flooded the theaters to see that, but it had legs too, right? So that's, I'm going to totally defeat my own argument here. People went to see it because they were waiting on the answer for like Luke Skywalker, and I had that expectation. The Last Jedi may have seriously derailed the entire franchise. I don't know.
I don't think that's what it is, to be honest with you. You know, like I said, I've revised. I think the performance of this film has even made me look back on what may have. I think that The Last Jedi's box office was probably a little more realistic than The Force Awakens box office.
Yeah.
You know, right. For a number of reasons. But it's bizarre to me. What's hard for me to figure out is why this movie played out, because it is the third part of a trilogy, right?
Right.
So we don't usually gauge trilogies the same way you would judge like franchises, in the sense of like if this was the third movie in a franchise, right? Mm-hmm. That's a little different, but like this, you know, like you Harry kind Potter. Of expect like a something, something part three to not do as well as, you know, maybe parts one and even two to a point, right? Cause it's fatigue sets in, but usually when it's the final part of a story, which, and in this case, it's not just the final part of this trilogy. It was essentially the final part of a 40-year saga. You don't expect it to fall off this much.
Right.
You know? And that's the surprising part for me. And it tells me that, you know, there might have been an audience. I think that there was probably an audience that, you know, a large portion of the audience that went to The Force Awakens that may have just been there for, like, the nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because I'm trying to figure out, like, what part of that audience didn't come back. You know, like, how much of the Last Jedi and how much of the Rise of Skywalker audiences were, like, the older crowd that just had given up because they got their nostalgia fix and now they didn't need to go back again? And how much of it was, like, a modern audience that, you know, just wasn't happy with, like, the storytelling or whatever? Because something, right, somewhere along the way, the audience was slashed from Force Awakens to Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, or maybe it was a combination. I don't know. I mean, I don't know a lot of people that everyone that I know that went to see The Force Awakens saw The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
So I don't
there weren't
know...
people that dropped off after The
yeah,
Force Awakens.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people. I don't know a lot of people that
I think
only saw one of the movies or didn't see, you know, so I can't,
yeah,
I haven't spoken
I mean,
to anybody
I think,
like
I
that.
Think you're 100% right. I mean, I think going back to some of the things we said before on previous shows, and guys, we'll move on from this. I know we're berating you guys with this conversation over and over again, but you know, I think part of it was the replay factor with The Force Awakens. It just struck all the right chords from a nostalgia perspective.
Yeah.
So I think that's that. I think there were a lot more repeat viewings.
Right.
It may have also, and I'm assuming this is the case, not having looked at the numbers in a long time, but it performed probably well overseas for the same reasons. And so, you know, maybe it was internationals off, you know, international audiences saying, okay, we've got a little bit of Star Wars, and then kind of like trailing off from there, or having the same repeat factor, which then gets, okay, I'm good. I to your point, I got my fix on that. Let's check this other movie out. Yeah. I don't know.
I know. Well, anyway,
it's going to be the mystery for the ages.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about, you want to get into some of the stuff? Oh, well, you know what? Because we're kind of on box office, let's, instead of focusing now on what was, let's focus on what will be for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Birds of Prey will be opening this this weekend, actually.
Yes.
And we're going to be dropping this episode a day early. So I was going to say the day this episode drops will be the day the reviews come out, but it's actually going to be, this episode will be available a day earlier than that. But, so none of the reviews are out as we thought. I mean, I have seen some people commenting who have seen it.
Right.
You know, and it's mostly positive, you know, a lot of good things said about it, at least from what I saw. I haven't focused too much on it. But the box office forecasting right now has that movie anywhere in the $40 to $60 million opening weekend range that I've seen, and probably the closer to like the $45 to $50 million range for an opening weekend. That seems a little low to me.
I actually, you know, it's funny. I saw something else though.
Okay,
where did I see this? I saw something like $100 to $125 million.
Yeah, see that. That seems, I mean, I'm looking, what I was looking at was the Box Office Pro long range forecasting, and they're usually pretty good with that stuff, but I don't know, man.
I see that number. I don't remember.
Yeah. So now the budget for the movie was like $97 million, something like that.
Mm.
So it doesn't have to make $1 billion, you know, to be successful. And I don't think anybody expects it to, although you never know. But, I don't know, $50-60 million seems low. I just felt like this movie has been really well marketed, and I feel like it's coming out now at a time when not much else is out. You know, Bad Boys has run its course, and
right.
You know, so it's in that prime spot now that like we've seen with like Black Panther and Captain Marvel and stuff, where it's like right before all the summer stuff, so I feel like it's going to do really well. Not that there would be anything wrong with like a $60 million opening weekend for a movie like this, but I don't know. I just feel like I feel the momentum is stronger than that. Maybe I'm just analyzing.
No, I agree with you. So where I saw the story was Deadline, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's but this is a worldwide start. So maybe what you're looking at is potentially
I'm sorry. I'm talking domestic numbers only.
Yeah. So worldwide start between 110 to 125.
All right, so then that would put it, then you would figure with the split, so that would be, they're saying, yeah, somewhere around a $40 to $60 million domestic opening.
Shazam got a global opening of 158.
Right.
Shazam. Oh.
Yeah, but that was marketed really well too.
Sure was.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like, because it does kind of sort of have the Batman connection and Joker. You know, I figure it may, even though I know most people will realize it's very different from Joker, but you figure there might be a little momentum there with
that.
Dude,
this is like a Batman Deadpool movie with women. Like,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's got that edge and vibe to it. With like,
this, wouldn't
make any sense.
I get it, and it wouldn't. That's why I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if, because I don't think anybody would have predicted Deadpool to the first one to make the kind of money it made in its opening weekend.
No way.
That was a complete shock. I just feel like this thing, I don't know. I won't be disappointed if it does do in the $50 to $60 million range. That's still a very good opening weekend. But I just feel like it's heading towards more than that.
Yeah. I'm going to do everything in my power to check it out this weekend.
Yeah.
So we got something to talk about.
Yeah.
On Tuesday.
Exactly.
I think it'll do fine. I think it'll be fine.
So what was there anything that stood out for you during the Super Bowl?
So didn't watch the Super Bowl again on my deathbed all weekend. Okay. Sick as hell. I caught up on all of the with the exception of the Furious, the whatever FF9, Fast and Furious 9. I caught that trailer on Friday when it dropped.
Right.
So let's start there. Cause whole concert, whole nine, like usually in the evenings, there's like, you know, Dateline, some murder mystery thing on Friday evenings that I'll, occasionally tune in on, but nope. NBC had a full blown concert with Ludacris and a whole bunch of people on stage, whatever. So the trailer, yeah. What? That's pretty much. I was like, what? What is happening? This freaking thing is like amped up on crack and nitro and craziness. It was long as hell, and gosh, I felt like they like. It's gonna sound really bad, but it felt like they kind of. Like blew their load too fast. There was like all of these hot action sequences that I think are going to make the movie. And they did some, I don't know. Stunned my brain.
Yeah. I think anyone who's going to go see this movie knows what they're getting. Right. I mean, this franchise since Fast Five has been just off the wall, batshit crazy, like unapologetic about what it is now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, how are we going to top it? You know, how are we going to top the last one this time? That's really what it's become. I mean, Justin Lin is back directing this one.
Yeah.
F. Gary Gray directed the last one. So that's a good thing, right? I mean,
Justin Lin came in Tokyo Drift.
He came in Tokyo Drift and then continued on. Through Fast and Furious and then Fast Five when they really transformed the whole what this franchise is. And then he took a break for actually, he didn't direct 8 was James Wan, right? Directed Fate of the Furious and then, Fast and Furious 7. And then Fate of the Furious, the last one, was directed by F. Gary Gray. So Justin Lin returns for the first time since Fast and Furious 6. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a positive sign. Now John Cena's in this as
dude,
Dom's brother. He plays Dom's brother. Yeah. Like, which just is whatever. Sure. You know.
What?
The Rock is not in this one for the first time.
Yeah, but they still stitched it together. Because Helen Mirren is in this.
Yes.
And she is the connecting thread between the two.
Yes.
Two films.
Yeah.
Because she's a Shaw.
Right. And they showed the return of Han, we think.
Dude, pissed me off.
Well, we don't even know what that's going to wind up
being. I don't even know what this is.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, again, the whole time. I was like, what?
But we're talking about it. So that's the key. Right.
Jess next to me is like laughing. She's like, I can't take any of this seriously. I'm like, the point is not to.
Oh, yeah. Why would you? You can't just take any of this seriously.
Like, well, she's like, I used to just like it when they were racing cars. I'm like, that was the first movie. What are you? That's, you know what I mean? This is a whole other animal. Now.
I mean, I see. So I'm the opposite. Like, I was not as crazy about it when they were just racing cars, because that's not necessarily my thing. But although I did, you know, those movies are fine. Well, a couple of them anyway.
First one is like my favorite.
The first one, well, yeah. No, so I preferred this thing when it became a completely ridiculous action franchise. Like, that's when I really started to get into it because it's just this goofy, like, you know, when you go into this movie, you're going to check your brain at the door and forget about all sense of reality and what makes sense. I mean, they're going to be flying cars through, you know, from skyscraper to skyscraper and hanging them from helicopter. I mean, you know, things that are just like, you can't overthink these things, nor should you even try to think them. You know, it's just ridiculousness. It's almost like
a plane picks up a car.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. That
like
happens.
Magnetizes a car.
Sure.
I was like, I couldn't even make that shit up as a 5-year-old pretending to do that with my Matchbox car.
It's like science fiction without the science. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's completely off the wall.
Dude, the car bungee jumps.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect.
And
absolutely.
Pendulum swings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what?
Nothing wrong with that.
What's going on? Holy shit.
So, I'll.
Do you think this is going to work without The Rock?
Probably. I mean, The Rock is a huge personality, and obviously he was great. And his, the chemistry he wound up having with Statham, which led to Hobbs and Shaw becoming its own thing, was great. But sure, I don't see why it couldn't. It's still what it is, right? It's still a crazy now just action
kind of shit in that movie.
Yeah, and you know, John Cena is good. I mean, granted, he's playing a villain. We think, anyway. I mean, he's at least that's what he's billed as. We don't know what he ends up as, but I know what I'm going to think of the movie? Do I know what people are going to think? I have no idea, but I know that I'll be there opening weekend, and I will expect to just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, these movies to me are like, you know, when I used to go see... And they're not this, but like in when I was a kid and you'd go to see like the new Schwarzenegger film or the new, like it's just like they're just action movies. Like you don't expect high art necessarily. You know, you just want to see cool things. You know, like if I was going to go see like a Seagal film or if I was going to go see whatever, like it's like, okay, what cool fight scenes? Like, you know, you just know what you're getting. It's its own thing.
I see what you're saying. It's just, you know, I guess as a kid, I'd have to put myself in the adult mind frames. I'd love to ask some of people who were adults during that era, like our parents. You know, like, did you know that people don't go flying backwards when they get shot by bullets? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Was that a thing? Like, did you go, oh, that's like phony? You know, did you know people like when an explosion happens, they don't go like flying into the air and flip?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like where it's at.
Right.
Because a lot of this stuff is like, yeah, that shit just, no.
I mean, look, they have that whole, like, that's a part of, like, Last Action Hero, right? When he comes here into reality. It's it's like you run out of bullets and you can't just break, you know, car windows without having any repercussions and things like that. Like that was a nod to all of that stuff. Like all these ridiculous things that happen in those action movies, like that we grew up watching that just could never happen. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The Schwarzenegger.
So this is the modern day, you know, version of that basically, you know, except they're doing it with vehicles. And instead of necessarily like, you know, they're not shooting everything up there. I mean, there is that, but you know, they're driving things through things and stuff. So, yeah.
Right. I'm trying to remember, but didn't like, cause I like phased out of, not that I phased out. I just forgot because they start to mesh all together, but like, didn't Dom knock up the other girl? Is that his kid from the, like, I don't remember. Who cares? I was trying to remember. I was like, hey, didn't Dom knock up that police officer before Letty came back?
Yeah, you're thinking too much about this. Now you're doing like when you do with Star Wars. You're just overthinking this. It doesn't even matter. Like it starts to blend together. Like you're going to start to, I even sometimes start to forget. Which movie was that in now? Because like at one point, like from like 5 on and even parts of 4 really when it started to shift a little bit, like they just everything blends together.
I don't even remember 4.
Fast and Furious.
That yeah, but was I don't even remember they... what was happening. Oh, wait. Yes, I do remember.
That was this the return of Vin Diesel to the...
Yeah, you know. That's when him and Brian are back at it again. And, he's looking for Hans. Well, he's looking for something. Vin Diesel's looking for something.
Yeah, well, of
maybe
course.
It's Hans' murderer or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I own the majority.
I do too. Yeah.
You know.
I do too.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was a standout.
Yeah.
What else? I want to hold on to the Disney Plus one.
Yeah.
For a bit. Jeez. Oh, Mulan, man. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Yeah. That looks amazing.
There's something special about that. I don't know what it is.
I'll know exactly what it is. For me anyway, it looks like some of the great, like, really epic, like, samurai-type films.
Got that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Hero.
Yeah.
You know, House of the Flying Daggers vibe to it.
Yeah, it's got...
which are all of those are great films.
Amazing, yeah. And, but it there's also movies like Red Cliff, which John Woo directed, you know, just that it's got that kind of epic feel going for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, the Disney message and, you know, themes and whatnot behind it.
It just looks stunning.
It does. It looks unbelievable.
Oh man, it's one of my favorite actors. Jason Scott Lee is the villain.
Jason Scott Lee is great. Yeah.
He's great, man. Yes. Probably one of the best on-screen Bruce Lees.
So Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, while not the most factually accurate.
I love that movie.
Story. He's fantastic in that.
I love that movie to death.
Yeah, I do too. Even after the fact that I saw that before I had ever dabbled in the world of Bruce Lee and his martial arts. And then having learned how much of that movie actually stretches the truth and isn't completely accurate, it still doesn't matter because it's still a well-made film. And, not everything has to be. Trust me, if they actually told the real story, it wouldn't be nearly as exciting.
Right.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
Real good movie.
So good to see that he's still out there.
Yeah. So Mulan, it seems like one of those movies where, like, I don't think I would actually feel bad, like, going to see that in the theater.
Yeah.
You know, because I just feel like it just seems like on another level from a lot of this stuff, as opposed to being just like a shot-for-shot live-action retelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for it. I think I would love to take my daughter to see it. I think that witch is going to creep her out. So we'll see. And she hasn't really seen any trailers. So maybe I'll introduce her to those first and see if she gets excited about it.
Yeah.
Let me think. What else?
Well,
was
the Black Widow trailer, which, I mean, you know, watching the trailer during the Super Bowl, I hadn't really moved the needle for me much, but, you know, watching it during the Super Bowl, for whatever reason, I was like, okay, you know what? Yeah, this just definitely has that Marvel feel to it.
Yeah.
And it just kind of felt... I still don't know whether it's going to perform like... like Captain Marvel, or if it's going to perform more like, like Doctor Strange and Ant-Man. But maybe somewhere in between. But it just felt bigger for some reason watching that.
Yeah,
trailer
I agree with you. I saw it and I was like, you know what? I'm actually kind of excited about this.
Yeah.
Well, because it was like, it's really, really quick beats. We get a quick snapshot of the new Widow program in that it looked like a new Widow program because everyone looked pretty fresh. I don't know. There's something about it in terms of timelines and all of that that has me intrigued. Like where this lives, what are some of the bigger implications that this movie will have on the rest of the MCU? So, yeah, I'm intrigued by this film, and I think it's gonna do well because I know a lot of people have been asking for it, and Taskmaster actually looks, now that there's like that scene where he or she, because I don't know, Taskmaster, for some reason, I think is a woman in this. I think they flipped it. But there's a epic fight scene, and it looks pretty cool. Does the same like Cap thing where he steps on the shield and goes to his arm? I don't know if you caught that.
Right.
So, anyways.
Yeah. So that's something that stood out for me. I mean, there really wasn't much. I mean, the you know, like you said, that Disney Plus
dude
commercial was great.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they.
So, where do you want to start with that? Because that gave us a lot.
It sure did.
In 30 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, we knew all of those things were happening, right? And we've even seen bits and pieces of all of those things. But to see it all like that, it seemed very epic. It seemed like, I can't miss this. Like, even though
it seemed super cinematic. And that too. The beautiful thing about this.
Yeah. I mean, it is Marvel Studios doing it, so, you know, because
the quality is there.
It's going to have to look and sound. And, you know, look, we've talked about how that may not always be the best thing, because you do like to have a little diversity and some difference in the product, but, like, it's going to look and sound like the movies, because it has to. I mean, it's essentially an extension of that.
Right.
So it's not like they're going to make these, like, low-budget, like, shows just to, you know, cram these characters in. Like, these are smaller extensions of these movies, of this movie universe. So it should look and feel like those. It should look and feel cinematic and big. I mean, the WandaVision thing is,
I mean,
looks wacky. I mean, bananas. Like, in a good way, not in a bad way, but like, and I even had a couple people say to me, like, what was that?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
it looks awesome. I have no idea what it's doing. It's probably like memories or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's some of it's tying into the Vision comics run, like the more modern ones, where it's very like.
Yeah, I think it's pulling from like two stories.
Yeah, so that's that, and but you know, not everyone in the world is familiar with that, right, and it also ties into Doctor Strange, right? The new one in the multiverse of madness. So there's going to be elements of that, I'm sure. You know, starting to introduce all of that, those concepts and whatnot.
Yeah,
and Scarlet Witch is going to be in that. Right. The Doctor Strange movie. So, yeah, I mean, it looks cool. I mean, the Falcon and Winter Soldier stuff looks really cool.
See Zemo again.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we see U.S. Agent kind of stepping in as a propaganda machine for the U.S. government, likely. And then we get that quick little flash of Loki. And I've seen a whole bunch of YouTube videos kind of explaining the jumper that he's on. Apparently there's I know nothing of this, but there's apparently some like time police that monitor the multiverse in the Marvel world. And that's who actually has him. That's why he's in a jumper. And their logo is on his chest. So some really cool stuff there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he's going to impact some of the MCU.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we have to wait till like the fall of this year, right? Or
yes.
August, I think, maybe is the first one. But yes. Which is almost the fall. But yeah, I mean, it'll come quicker than we realize. But it's like, it seems like we've been waiting forever for those.
But I mean, the quality, again, I think it speaks to the quality of whatever it is that they're delivering.
Yeah.
We saw it with The Mandalorian. I'm good. I'm good with the wait. I'll be honest with you. I'm good with the wait.
Well, I'm good with the wait, too, only because, like, I feel like once all these shows are a thing, like, I'm not going to have time.
Right.
And right now, like, I'm watching Star Trek Picard, and I'm able to do that, like, without having to worry about having a million other things to watch, so I can just digest that and enjoy it. And, you know, by the time that's over, you know, then I'll move it. You know, so it's like I like having my TV paced. I don't like having to feel like it's – I mean, I was thinking about it the other day. So it's like when I was, you know, young, when I was little, like in school, like I always loved to read, right? And I still do. Like read – like I could read anything. Like if I was sitting in a doctor's office and there was a brochure on toenail fungus, I'd read it just because I loved to read. But like, if you assigned me a book, like to have to read, to do like a report on like a schedule, like I hated to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I just don't want to have to feel like I have to get through something, you know, like the pressure of like, oh, I got this show to watch, 'cause then I got to go on to something else and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I like being able to just have my TV be entertainment, like, and just have a couple of shows here and there. So yeah, I don't mind the wait either. And I wouldn't mind if they pace out those shows a little bit too, so that they're not like one on top of another.
I mean, you know, they're going to be strategic about it. They're going to be placing these in between. I mean, I think the slate even has it laid out like this, where it's like a show and then a movie, a show and then a movie.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big thing. And, I'm excited. I'm really excited about, and I'm glad I got this service, man.
Yeah,
I really am.
And you are not the only one.
No.
Who has gotten that service.
Millions of people have gotten that service.
Yeah. So Disney announced some numbers. Then they did what Apple TV Plus didn't do, what Apple didn't do with their service, which is announce numbers.
Right. Oddly.
Yeah. So, and there's a couple of things about the numbers. So, the number that they released, as far as, there were two numbers that went out. In the earnings report, they stated that there were 26.5 million subscribers by the end of December. Okay. But there are actually 28.6 million subscribers as of like today.
Right. Okay,
so that number's actually gone up, which is significant.
That's big old cojones for that move.
Yeah. Here's to put some context to these numbers. So the Disney direct to consumer division, right, which is where this streaming would be what division it would be a part of, it saw a growth of $900 million to $4 billion in the quarter. It's not bad. I mean, and, you know, so clearly they're expecting to get another bump in domestic subscribers when, you know, the Marvel shows start to run out, to mm-hmm. roll out, and the, you know, the Mandalorian season 2 will roll out.
In October.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's incredible. So here, this is an article from, actually, this was pulled from a few different places. Variety had this, but then other people picked up on it.
Yeah.
Disney Plus made a good portion of Netflix's total domestic subscriber base. They've officially surpassed the number of HBO Now subscribers. They've also recorded, and here's where it's significant, they've recorded gains in subscribers for the two other streaming services, Hulu and ESPN Plus, because remember they have that bundle for $12.99.
Right, right.
So Hulu went from 22.8 million subscribers at the end of December 2018 to 30.4 million by the end of 2019. ESPN Plus went from 1.4 million at the end of December 2018 to 6.6 million at the end of 2019.
Bananas.
And a lot of that is driven by that bundle program.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they originally estimated that by 2024, they would have between 60 and 90 million subscribers, and they are well on their way to surpassing that, or at least meeting the higher end of those expectations. So they might have to readjust that. So this has been a huge success. You know, and a lot of people will say, yeah, but that's because, you know, they're giving the free year to the Verizon people. But still, when you look at the growth of 900 million to 4 billion, obviously there are a lot of people paying for it as well.
Yeah, I'm one of them. And I have Verizon, which is stupid now that I think about it. But whatever.
That's so nice of you, Aaron.
I just throw myself in the mud on the show. But it's smart as hell, man. It's so smart to link up with Verizon. So smart. Gain exposure. You know, you can pick up momentum that way.
Yeah, and we've spoken about this a lot of times, right? Where the reason why anybody ever gives a free trial is because 75% of people who get them don't deactivate them. Right. Yeah. So
you're gonna pay for it anyways.
Yeah. And look, clearly, I mean, they're still gaining subscribers. So, I mean, they were already up like 2 million subscribers just after the first, from the first couple weeks of the year. Mm-hmm. They gained another 2 million subscribers.
And I wonder if they still, and I'm sure this is the case, but they haven't deployed in some markets. So,
well, their overseas is still growing, and they expect the majority of their growth to happen overseas.
Yep.
Because that's where the mark, they have more room to expand, clearly. But even still, I mean, look, that's, if they get to, as a direct-to-consumer product, if they get to, like, worldwide numbers that are close to, like, what Netflix is at now, I mean, that's enormous for them, because they would, they own the rights to all of that content. It's not like, I mean, yeah, there are going to be a couple of things where they might have to pay rights fees on, but, like, Netflix is all, for the most part, was mostly rights fees for a lot of their content. I mean, yeah, they do have their original products, but, I mean, Netflix isn't a studio the size of Disney that can afford to, I mean, they're hemorrhaging money on those original projects.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's an enormous success, and it should be inspiring for, you know, the people that are creating their other services, like Warner Media with HBO Max and with Peacock and, you know, all of these other direct-to-consumer things. I mean, CBS All Access has been steady. You know, they were never expecting to do what Disney Plus is doing.
Right.
But, you know, they've been steady with that, and they have a lot of buzz generated for, like, their Star Trek shows and some of their other shows. So,
dude, I mean, it's
working. It's, I mean, this direct-to-consumer model is clearly working, and there's just huge advantages to it, especially when they start to integrate and use their power, like with Disney, being able to integrate Hulu and ESPN Plus into that. I mean, look at how just Disney Plus alone has been responsible for increasing the subscriber base of ESPN Plus, which is a fringe, like, sports streaming service.
Right.
You know, from, and it's not all because of Disney Plus. I mean, yeah, they've, their relationship with UFC helps too, but I mean, I think a lot of that increase from 1.4 million to 6.6 million in a year. I mean, a lot of that has to be because there are people right now paying for that bundle who may not even watch ESPN Plus. They just felt it was a good enough deal to pay the $12.99 to get that, and, you know, Disney Plus and Hulu. ESPN Plus is like a bonus. But, you know, maybe they sample ESPN Plus, and maybe they decide to stay with it. Or even if they don't, like, who cares?
Right.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's just, it works. And I'm hoping that, and we don't know what the Apple TV Plus numbers were. They didn't release them, like I said. And probably, they said they were very good or strong or whatever their quote was. But
sure.
They didn't choose to release them, so that I would think if they were, you know, if this was something that they could boast about, they would have.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know.
And obviously Apple TV Plus is a very different animal from Disney Plus. They're, they're trying to accomplish different things. So it's not really like an apples to apples comparison, even though a lot of people try to make it out to be that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is very
relying on other studios for content and things like that outside of their original stuff. Yeah, so.
And it's more about integration and stuff like that, which is fine. Yeah. But
it should be, you know, to your point earlier, it should be an inspiration for, you know, all of these studios and networks to, you know, in terms of what consumers expect on day one launch as well. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So something like Peacock can't just rely on original content. You gotta bring the library.
Sure.
You know, library is going to be key. And it's got to be stuff that people, you know, are looking for and can't get. I wouldn't be surprised if Sony launched its own thing.
I mean, yeah, they certainly could.
So, like, AMC?
Yes.
Is, right? That's a Sony-owned network.
No, right? Wait. No? AMC is part of, because they're affiliated with the company that I think runs Philo. Yeah, so so AMC is its own thing. That's what I thought. AMC Networks is its own thing. It's AMC, IFC, WeTV, BBC America,
gotcha.
Sundance. That's all part of, 'cause I was going to say they were a big, they branched off on their own. They were owned by a company called Rainbow Media, which I knew because that was a former subsidiary of Cablevision. And then when they started to sell off their individual pieces. That was one of them. Oh, but they were big on they were part of the original group that went in on Philo, which is another over the top streaming service that does live TV. It's like a $20 a month thing, and you get like X amount of channels. But yeah, so they've actually been talking though for a while, AMC, about creating a standalone service of their own. AMC networks that would offer, well, but I mean, there's a niche. Listen, there's a lot of people that like, you know, IFC and Sundance, and they won't be able to. I doubt they'll be able to get in the BBC America stuff, only because a lot of that stuff, you know, is tied up in from the British side into BritBox, which is their service between BBC America and ITV, and then you have. You know, they have deals with like Amazon and whatnot and stuff like that. But but they could, you know, create a streaming service of their own. And originally the idea was to create like a streaming service that would offer like the live channels in one package. I know Discovery Networks also toyed around with that idea as well, until they finally were able to get penetration in more of the streaming. So like they just added them to like Sling TV not too long ago. So like Discovery Networks are, there's a big fan base for those networks. So, but they were for a while thinking about creating their own standalone service. So like, yeah, there's plenty of options for this stuff. Although it would, yeah, it would probably behoove, Sony. Yeah. If they aren't going to do something on their own, to figure out a way to incorporate, to strike a deal with Disney so they could get the rights to the Spider-Man film, like the, especially like Homecoming and Far From Home for Disney Plus. Because it is weird. You know, people that are trying to like binge the MCU have to like go somewhere else.
Yeah.
To get those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also crazy how fast, the newer movies are ending up on Disney Plus, which is something I was really interested to see happen. So, you know, Aladdin is on there, new Aladdin. Lion King just dropped, I think, like last week.
I mean, why?
Toy Story 4 is on its way.
So here's the thing, because, like, if it's going to help drive up your subscriber base, like, after a while, like, who would you rather have? If Disney Plus is going to be, like, the future of your, one of your futures of like streaming and whatnot, like, would you rather have people paying whatever it is, $20 or whatever, to download a digital copy, or would you rather just subscribe to your service so they could get them on your service? Like, I think the long range, that's probably better.
I mean, that makes a shit ton of sense to me. I'm not gonna buy it. I would have, you know, I'm like Frozen 2, I'm waiting for it.
Right.
You know, and never have I been like that, where I've waited for a piece of content. Now, granted, like Frozen 2 is not my cup of tea. It's like the first thing, because trust me, when Rise of Skywalker drops, regardless of how I feel, like, I got to see that thing again.
Of course. Right away. Yeah. So. Especially because they have them in 4K and everything, too. So it's like, you know, would, you know, rather than somebody pay probably like $25 for a 4K digital copy or something.
Just wait.
But you're getting whatever it is, $6-7 a month out of those same people. So it's like, would you rather get one $25 purchase, or would you, which they're splitting, with whoever, Vudu or Amazon, whoever, you know, you buy it from. They're splitting that. Or would you rather that person just commit to your streaming service, knowing that they'll most likely will stick around and giving you whatever the yearly price was, or even, you know, stick around, you know, $70 a year or whatever. Like, to me, that makes more sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you're not,
man,
splitting that with anybody.
Yeah. It goes right into your pocket.
Yeah. You know, so that, yeah, that's why you're seeing that.
That's, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So excited for all that stuff.
Sure.
Meanwhile, you know, it's interesting to watch the strategy shift on Netflix and Amazon. They're honing in on like documentaries, honing in on, you know, comedy, stand up.
Yeah, and there's audiences for that, but
sure.
I don't know that you're going to be able, well, Amazon is a whole different
thing. Amazon's doing the same thing. I just saw a whole
But they're, as a business entity, they're a whole different Yeah, I mean, Netflix is. I don't know that Netflix is going to be able to survive charging what they charge, which is much more than these other services offering less on just stand-up comedy specials and documentaries. So they eventually have to. That's going to be an
Here's a funny thing. So a lot of just thinking about. So my tastes. There are some things that I still enjoy on Netflix, right? So I'm watching Witcher now, and that's a pretty dope kind of thing. And I don't expect to see something like that on Disney Plus, right? At least not yet.
No, until
they drop Willow. But there's that kind of those kinds of licenses that are and deals being struck between Netflix and, you know, video game producers and those kinds of content creators and directors. You know what I'm saying? So there's that kind of realm that's happening that I don't necessarily expect to see on Disney Plus. Not because they're not capable of creating that stuff. It's just that there's it's not very Disney-like, I should say. Hulu is a different story, but I don't see that kind of content making its way to Hulu like it is in the Netflix world. You know what I'm saying? But we'll see. There's lots of opportunity. Now the one service that I think is, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that I think is like missing the boat big time is DC Universe. Like,
well,
what's going on?
So
there?
Honestly, I think that the future of DC Universe lies in HBO Max. Yeah, I believe that from the very beginning. I don't think DC Universe as a video streaming service is long for the world once HBO Max becomes a thing. I think we're going to start to see a lot of that content shift over to HBO Max. And I think, you know, maybe DC Universe exists for like the comic side of it. Maybe it exists as a split service, but like to me, like if you're going to get a lot of that content on HBO Max and you're going to get HBO Max, you're clearly not going to need DC Universe unless you just love like all the comic book aspects of it.
And there's going to be some overlap in terms of content.
Yes. In the beginning, but I think that's a way to eventually slide and transition people over. Yeah.
Cause I can't justify. So you're paying what? $69.99 a year
for something like that. Yeah,
DC Universe, that's not worth the investment.
No, not right now, especially.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. And it's been around for a year and change.
And I loved it in the beginning, but like once I realized, like, well, I have a lot. I own. See, the problem with DC Universe is that, and I mean, technically, I owned a lot of the Marvel stuff and Star Wars and stuff too. But like, I owned so much of that already digitally. Yeah. Like the classic stuff, like Batman the Animated Series and all the Batman movies and the Superman movies and the Superman. Like I own some, like, and I've seen those things so many times that, like, for me, there wasn't as much to dig into.
Right.
Whereas, like, with HBO, with Disney Plus, like, I'm watching stuff that, like, you know, like, I didn't necessarily own stuff that I didn't see, I hadn't seen in a while that I could enjoy and dig into and,
Dude, I get lost in Disney Plus.
Yeah, and the new content on DC Universe was good, but like again, like, you know, Swamp Thing not coming back, and you know, so it's like it's just not the same. And again, I do believe that will be expanded. I feel like I said, I feel like that future of that is ultimately going to be with HBO Max. It would make sense because why would you want to launch HBO Max without all of that content?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know, but I don't think that DC Universe was ever meant to be like a Disney Plus, though.
No,
I think
it was
meant to be a niche streaming service for, like, you know, because it's very much geared towards like the comic books and the superheroes and stuff. Because it's DC Comics, it's not like Warner Plus, right? It's DC Universe.
Right.
So it's different. It would almost be like if Marvel started their own streaming service.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Which they didn't
do. And at this point, the only thing that it has that it isn't, you know, folding into Disney Plus is the comic stuff. So that stuff still lives on its own.
Sure. And I think that's what will happen eventually.
Right.
With, yeah. Yeah, cool. I just think it's a little harder because with DC Universe, like, you had all these existing subscribers, I think many of whom paid, you know, the, like, the year and whatnot, so there's going to be...
I'm one of them.
Yeah, so there's going to be that, like, a time where both services will exist, and it's like, well, if I already paid for DC Universe, like, I'm not going to give up on that.
Right,
but then
right.
once, you know, over time, like, when it's time to renew, whatever, it's like, well, if I can get all this stuff on HBO Max, then why wouldn't I do that?
And then some, because now you're not just getting the DC content, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, sure, that's what I mean. There's like, well, like with Disney Plus. So Disney Plus, you're getting the Marvel stuff or the Star Wars stuff, plus all of this other Disney stuff.
Right.
With HBO Max, hopefully, you know, you're going to get all of that Warner-related stuff, which would include the DC stuff. And they still have been somewhat vague for now, right, about exactly what will be available at launch. I don't know that anybody will ever have the amount of content available at launch that Disney Plus had.
Holy cow.
That was quite
ambitious. They knew it.
Yeah.
They knew it. They were like, look, here's a list of the thousands of hours of content that you have at your disposal on day one. It's like, there's just so much to chew on. I discover something new every time I'm on there. So it's a lot of fun.
Right.
Then, I mean, to be honest, there are still things that are licensed out to the likes of Netflix that I still find myself going back to because my daughter likes certain shows and they don't have them yet. I'm like, only a matter of time, baby, where only you'll be watching Disney Plus. But she knows. It's like I go to the icon and she's like, no, 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 Daddy, I want to watch like something else that she knows isn't on Disney Plus. But like I said, only a matter of time.
Yep.
Anyway, so stocks are great for Disney Plus, I guess, or not stocks, but performance wise is great.
Yeah.
But not for another brand.
No, so we're gonna do something here that we haven't really done on the show before. Usually if we're going to talk anything wrestling related, we bring on the Wrestling Council, but today you and I are going to talk about this because this is bigger than just wrestling, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is about World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, the media conglomerate, which is having some trouble right now. So, you know, a couple episodes ago when we had Phil on talking about at the time AEW had signed their big TV deal with TNT ahead of time. And, you know, I've been very critical of WWE because I've been screaming now for a while, both in our like DMs on Twitter with our wrestling, you know, people that we talk to, Phil and Tavo and Nathan. And even on this show from time to time about how, like, I think so many people are so caught up in WWE being like the big cheese, which they are, that people aren't realizing how they're failing in a lot of ways. Not failing to the point where, like, they're going to be out of business anytime soon, but something major happened this week, or last week, technically. Mm-hmm. So Vince McMahon and the board of directors had decided to get rid of George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, who had been promoted to co-presidents of the company in 2018. Barrios had been the chief financial officer for WWE for like almost 10 years, and Michelle Wilson was the chief brand officer before they got their co-promotions.
No, she was CMO,
chief marketing officer. Okay.
Right. Stephanie's the chief brand officer.
Yeah. So anyway, they were both promoted to co-presidents, right? So, and ultimately they were like basically in succession, right? To if something happened to Vince McMahon, they would basically take over the company. They were given a lot of the credit for negotiating the Fox deal, which fleeced Fox out of $2.5 billion for a show with declining ratings. And for also getting the Saudi Arabia deal, which whatever, for better or for worse, right? It did bring in guaranteed money. So those two deals alone are what are keeping this entire company profitable right now. Because everything else is down. You know, live attendance is so poor for their, they've started to cancel and cut back significantly on the amount of house shows that they're running because they lost money on house shows in the last quarter of 2019. You know, their television ratings are down. Their merchandise sales and all their just general licensing is down. And the scariest part is the network number is down. You know, and I mean, we mentioned this before, like they had projected by now that the WWE Network would have between 3 and 4 million subscribers. And it's not even at 2 million right now. And it was down 10% for the first time since it actually debuted, down from in last quarter from year to year. So that's a scary number because they cannibalized their pay-per-view business for the network.
For the network.
Yeah. And here's the scariest part. So their OIBDA, right, which is the like a big that's like their operating income, right, before it's like operating income before depreciation and something or other. It's a earnings thing. That's a big number on these calls, and it looks like the rumor is that when they announce their earnings, which will be Thursday of this week, that their projection originally was going to be 200 million. It's going to be 180. So, and these are all of these reasons why I think, you know, Vince hit the panic button.
Yep.
Because this is not going to be a great earnings call. Now, again, the company is profitable and they're going to be profitable for a while because of these, this guaranteed TV money and stuff that they have. But for investors, it's scary because there's two things that investors don't, one thing that investors don't like, and that's instability when it comes to the future. And right now, because of Barrios and Wilson being gone, there is no line of succession right now. So if something happens to Vince, well, there's nobody in place to take over the company. Well,
there, I mean, there is, but...
well, I mean, there is on paper, but it's nobody that Wall Street will be happy with. And Morgan Stanley actually downgraded their stock because of that. They said that they need to hire a legit executive with experience that so that investors can feel comfortable that there will be somebody to take over this company that knows what they're doing. I mean, everybody assumes Triple H will take over the wrestling end, but this is a much bigger corporation, right? So he's not going to be a CEO of a major corporation. Neither is Stephanie, right? And, you know, the two people that were in line to take that are gone now without, and it was an impulsive decision, right? So without even announcing, you know, who would be next in line. That's what's scary to people.
They were just gone.
Yeah. And the other thing is the declining metrics everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what happens in 5 years when that TV money is up and they have to renegotiate and their ratings are down?
Right.
Since that's what they're relying, and what happens if the entire television landscape changes in 5 years? This company is surviving solely on that right now because they're not selling tickets, they're not moving merchandise, they're, you know, so it's like, then what?
Right. Yeah. Scary times, man, for that company for sure.
Yeah, scary, I mean, it's
scary times.
It's interesting, and here's the other thing, you know, and I've mentioned this a lot, like, I think it was a complete mistake to take NXT off of the network to put it on USA to try to compete with AEW or hurt AEW. And I thought it was a mistake because, one, it wasn't needed. Like, WWE still could have been a huge, profitable company without AEW, but Vince just needed to compete, right? He needs to take out the competition. That's just how he operates. And this was a huge mistake because now, like, why would you subscribe to WWE Network right now? Like, unless there's a pay-per-view event in the month that you really need to see, which are few and far between these days, like, there's no regular weekly reason to have it. Like, and live wrestling is the thing that drives the network subscriptions. And now there's a lot less live wrestling on the network. So I think that was a mistake. And they got their $30 million a year or whatever from USA Network, but it still hasn't helped their financial projections that much. And it actually probably hurt the network.
Right.
And it didn't matter anyway because AEW still got their big TV deal early. So they're going to be around now for 4 or 5 years without any issues.
And they're outpacing it.
And the worst part is, because of the existence of AEW, that's forced WWE to have to drive up salaries. because now they have to pay their wrestlers, the main roster wrestlers, more to keep to compete. So now they're that hurts also. Now their operating costs go up. So all of this is like a perfect storm, and some of this could have been avoided.
Gosh, man.
And now Vince is going to be focusing on the XFL, even though he says he won't. We know he will.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's been, what, divesting shares?
Well, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it's not even, I mean, clearly he's separated out because of what happened the last time with the XFL.
Right, right.
But if anyone believes that Vince McMahon's going to let his quote-unquote football people handle all this, like, you know that's not, he's going to have a hand. This is his thing. This is something he wanted.
Right. And his pride is one thing, man, too. That,
sure.
It's a big deal. And yeah, so he's going head to head with Khan, who already owns a football team.
Wow, that's true too. I didn't even think of that. But
I mean, come on, man. You don't understand.
Yeah, he owns a football team. Now I'm going to own a football league. Yeah. I mean, no, but so that's the thing. It's like, so it, and that's something that investors, I think, have to worry about, are worried about too, is the fact that you know, is Vince's focus going to be there now? Because he doesn't have his now numbers one and two people behind him.
Right.
And we still don't know why they were let go. I mean, we know the, what the reasons are that they gave. Conflicting visions. I heard it was a lot about, like, you know, where they were going to put their capital and moving capital and whatnot. So who knows what that's all about. But I do know that Barrios and Wilson were very big proponents of the Fox deal, very big proponents of the Saudi Arabia deal, and that type of stuff. So you know,
the other thing too is they both had deep roots in the larger sporting community.
Yeah,
right. In the athletic community, which is big for this brand. Now, granted, they don't consider themselves to be sports. But
well, he does when it's convenient. It depends.
Right. Well, exactly.
When it's when the numbers look good against sports, they're sports. When they don't compare favorably to sports, they become entertainment.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I saw that, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, these are two of my clients. I mean, I worked closely with George and Michelle. So Michelle in particular, I saw that. I'm like, wow, you talk about a knee jerk reaction, to people who would put, you know, 10 plus years in at your company. And let's be honest, everyone knows that decisions are not made without Vince's sign off. So if they were making decisions that, you know, were in conflicting interests, what did they do? Say no, Vince?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's not a good idea?
We don't know. And I mean, look, and George Barrios was the guy who would run the earnings calls and everything, I mean, for the most part. So, yeah, I mean, it had to be something big because, I mean, Vince had to have known that this would have hurt the stock. So we haven't even mentioned that part. We've mentioned that the stock hurt, but just to put the numbers to it. So a year ago, the WWE stock was over $90 a share, heading towards $100 a share. And it was like a foregone conclusion that it would get there. And it didn't. And now it's been around the $45 mark. It closed slightly up today, so it's at like $47 a share. But it's been free-falling since they made that announcement.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens during this earnings call on Thursday, but it might tumble again, and that's not good. They're actually now, the company is not even, it's the valuation of the company now is, it's not even worth $1 billion.
Yeah.
Which is,
I mean,
amazing.
Investors are saying sell.
Yeah, sure.
AEW. Publicly traded yet?
No, and no. It won't be. No. I don't see any reason why it would be, because I don't, I never understand, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I understand why WWE went public, because they've made a lot of money on it. I get it. But for me, like, as a wrestling company, and AEW just wants to be a wrestling company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, so Tony Khan, who technically is the head of AEW, he grew up a huge wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now that they have the money, he has his company. But yeah, they don't have any, I don't think they're going to have any interest in taking that public, because I just don't see the, I mean, if, especially if it was your baby, like, because now, like, look at what Vince McMahon has to deal with. And he, I get it. Vince never wanted to be a wrestling promoter.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's the most successful wrestling promoter of all time is something that just never just been good enough for him. So, but whereas Tony Khan, like, he's loved wrestling his whole life. So for him, he's loving this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is exactly mm-hmm. what he wants. He gets a chance to be a wrestling promoter. So yeah, I don't see that there's any reason why they would ever need to go public. It's just a hard industry to be, publicly traded.
I mean, in that case, you know, in the case of WWE, your dirty laundry is being aired, and that just gives more confidence to your competition, right?
And, and these all these things you have to worry about, right? Like, so, like, you, it's not just about the wrestling product. It's like you're worrying about
masters to serve.
Yeah, who your executives are. You know, are they good enough for your, like, are, is Wall Street happy with the people that are running your company? Like, do they have faith in them? You know, you all of a sudden, like, you need to start, you got to make profits, right? Obviously, that's what the whole game is about. So, like, you can't even go through a phase of, like, not being profitable, because, like, AEW is going to wind up being profitable this year. But the original plan was for them to take a couple years where they would before they would be profitable.
Right.
Just they've been on the accelerated plan, though. You can't do that as a publicly traded company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have that safety net.
Yeah, and to your point about succession plans, I mean, in most cases, for those folks who are listening that don't typically follow this kind of stuff, when you fire somebody, right, when you remove leadership, you always within at least a day or two, follow it up with,
sure,
here's a replacement.
Yep.
Right? Sends a message of confidence. You back it up. This person is, you know, whatever. If the message was there was a conflict in strategies, well, we've hired somebody that is sharing Vince's, you know, direction, strategic vision, and here's why. But there was none of that messaging. None of that messaging that came out. In fact, here we are. We're going close on to a week since that announcement. Still nothing. So that company, to me, signals a state of panic. And obviously, investors are picking up on that. Analysts are picking up on that. So I expect it to get a little worse, a lot worse. Until there's some, you know, stability or, I would say maybe some creation of stability. I don't know what's happening. Maybe he's trying to convince, Stephanie to step up.
Yep.
No,
which is
not her thing.
I don't think she's ever been in line for that. I think there's a reason why Barrios and Wilson were the ones that they put as co-presidents. I think the investors.
Well, I mean, they had the business knack.
Yes,
I mean,
and that's what you mean.
And they came from outside of the organization. You know, so they had experience. You know, Steph McMahon's experience has been nothing but WWE. She's very comfortable where she is, for sure. She gets to put and push the brand in places that you wouldn't normally expect. She kind of has helped change the tone and voice and expose it to different audiences. And what I mean by that is, you know, you'd never expect to see WWE at Cannes, which is a major marketing and advertising organization, and they celebrate lots of really cool campaigns. You know, but they were vying for an Emmy.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years ago they were.
Right.
That's not happening.
And the other thing is, too, is that Barrios and Wilson had great relationships with Fox.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal. So just to kind of put this together. So the Morgan Stanley analyst, Benjamin Swinburne, he's the one who downgraded the stock, right, which caused a lot of this to happen. So these are the reasons why. He said there's three major sources of uncertainty right now for WWE investors. Barrios and Wilson had each been with WWE for more than a decade, and the company is now lacking senior leadership as CEO Vince McMahon is set to relaunch the XFL starting next weekend. WWE's investment outlook, which some analysts speculate was the cause of management's dispute with the board, and its capital allocation plans now seem extremely uncertain in the near term. And the departure of top executives without warning and without a clear path forward jeopardizes WWE's key partnerships, including its relationships with media companies like Fox Corp and sponsors like Progressive Corp and key talent like Roman Reigns. So I don't know where the Roman Reigns thing fits, but I know that with Progressive and Fox, Barrios and Wilson were the ones who negotiated those deals, and they've been very lucrative deals, and they were the relationship there. So that's never a good sign when they're not around, especially when it's like, by the way, they're not here anymore, and there's nobody for you to call right now if you need to ask somebody something. You know what I mean? Like, that's the weird part. Removing its two co-presidents, effective immediately, with no broader communication of the implications to the business and no clear path towards new leadership, increases the risk around managing, maintaining, and leveraging these critical relationships. So while they're still going to be profitable, again, there's two conversations here. The profitability is there because of the guaranteed money, but it's everything else around them that isn't working out that makes things scary. And if they don't figure out how to fix that, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, especially when their marquee show is starting to tank.
Right? Well, I mean, yeah, so SmackDown...
Like Raw is dropping.
Well, Raw is dropping. Raw, and now it had a little bit of a rebound after Royal Rumble, but like last night's Raw did one of the lowest numbers against non-football or basketball competition. It did like 2.17 million viewers, which is not great. And which SmackDown, which is now really the flagship show because it's on Fox and it's on, you know, network TV, even if it's on Friday, even then they were down again too. Like they were down to under 2.5 million viewers, under 2.4 actually. They're hovering right around 2.4 million viewers. That is not what Fox paid $2.5 billion for. Because, you know, we've said it 1,000 times, wrestling on television needs to do bigger numbers than equivalent programming because they draw lower ad rates.
Right.
Wrestling fans are not as desirable to advertisers, even if they're in the target demo. So a wrestling show doesn't draw in the ad revenue that another show would. So they're not doing great on Friday nights. And I mean, we've mentioned how NXT is not doing as well as equivalent programming was on USA on Wednesday nights. And they're paying them a lot of money for it. And Raw, so yeah, there's issues here. And they're going to need to fix the creative end of the wrestling product, because no matter what they try to do, that's still the lifeblood of this company. And without that, you know, sometimes when you have an idiot-proof product, because you have all this guaranteed money and you're like, well, it doesn't really matter what happens because we'll still be profitable. That sometimes is the worst mentality that you could take into something. Because then you almost don't feel the pressure to have to fix things. And I think that's what they're going to be facing right now.
They can't fix the CEO, though.
They can't.
They can.
Well, yes.
Steve Jobs was fired from Apple.
Sure. And I don't think that would happen here.
No. You never know.
Well, I mean, look, he could essentially start to buy back, right? He could start to buy enough stock to protect himself on that.
Sure.
But, it's going to be interesting to see. I wonder if at what point he decides, you know what, maybe it is time to start breaking this up. And let me appoint Paul Levesque as head of WWE wrestling, whatever, operations, and let me split off, and then let me just basically, I'll still be the CEO, but we're going to just start working on, we're going to put the people in place who can actually bring this thing into like the next generation. I don't know. Maybe I think that's probably what's needed right now.
Yeah. So from a business perspective, that totally makes sense, and God knows if that'll ever happen. You know, do you think that in terms of reinvigorating you know, excitement for the brand and the shows and things like that. I mean, WrestleMania is still some time away. April is, you know, what, two and a half months away.
Yeah.
And there's rumors of, you know, bringing on The Rock versus Hulk Hogan or what, God knows, whatever. Is that enough? And do you think it's too late?
Well, I mean, that stuff isn't going to be happening. The WrestleMania this year is going to be pretty much, it's going to be Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre. And it's going to be, I mean, I'm sure like they'll have people pop up.
Sure.
You know, like they do with Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia demands like certain amount of like legends, because that's what their audience is used to. So like Bill Goldberg was just brought, is going to be brought back now, because he's probably going to be set up for a match in the next Saudi Arabia show. And I mean, you never know. I think WrestleMania though is to a point where it's big enough on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they'll sprinkle in some things, but again, WrestleMania is not enough, because it would have been if it was still a pay-per-view.
Mm.
But now that it's not, and now that they give it away to free to a lot of people,
and nobody's watching it,
you know, it's like, I mean, it's, you know, it still draws, you know, really well. They sell a lot of tickets. It moves a lot of merch. It generates a lot of revenue, WrestleMania, for them. But the fact is, if it was a pay-per-view that they could be charging $70 for, probably, it would be making even more money than being on the network now, which the network number is declining, and they're giving, and of that number, by the way, that's still not all paid people, right?
Right.
So, which is even scarier. I never understood that part of the business model. I mean, I know that they were trying to drive up the numbers for the network as much as possible, but like, they really needed to think that through more. I still think they would have been better off keeping Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, and SummerSlam, and maybe even Survivor Series, but definitely those other three as pay-per-views. And you could have still had the network, and I think the network still would have probably been around where the number is now anyway.
Right.
And I think things would have been much better, and they would have been much more profitable. But whatever. I mean, look, we're here now. And I mean, at this point, it's really all about, can they start to turn this thing around? Can they shift their business model a little bit? And, you know, can they get up with the times? I think is really what it's about. And they need to stop being lazy and relying on guaranteed money coming in, and start working on their product. And start trying to market stars. You know, that's the whole other thing. We can get into a whole nother conversation that we won't get into about how Vince McMahon has essentially created an environment that is almost impossible to create stars.
Mm.
That's why so many of his stars are stars from yesterday. I mean, yeah, he has guys now that are main eventers and that are pushed, but they're not stars. You know, Seth Rollins isn't a star. Seth Rollins is not a guy who's going to walk into any, like, down the street in any city and people are going to know who he is. You know, he's not a Stone Cold Steve Austin or a Rock or a Hulk Hogan or a, you know, even a Randy Orton, you know, like, I mean, it's been a long time since they've created, like, and it's because everything is scripted promos and everybody talks in the same voice and nobody's able to stand out. And I mean, Roman Reigns, who was their chosen one, is a guy that the fans resent because of a lot of that. So like, until he creates an environment where they can create true stars, that's when everything will turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than people just looking at WWE as like, well, it's like the Harlem Globetrotters or Disney on Ice. You know, it's like, oh, this is just a thing that we watch. And it's WWE, and doesn't matter who you always have to have stars. That's what's always going to sell in pro wrestling. I don't care what you're trying to evolve the business into. I don't care what you want it to be. It's still pro wrestling, and it's still about stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just look at the Chris Jericho's quarter hour ratings on, you know, on Dynamite every week, and talk to me about how stars aren't important. So,
yeah. All right. Well, on that happy note,
yeah.
Let's
started
close
out
show
the show
up.
Talking about your stomach viruses and. Ending on that note.
Tanking stock prices and all of that. So it's, we've come full circle.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's do some plugs.
Sure. So, of course, thefanboygarage.com. You go check out our episodes, check out our merch store, get some t-shirts and mugs and pillows and stuff for our podcasters out there. You get your I'm Cool I Podcast shirt. We're going to have another variation on that coming out soon, which I think you've seen if you've been on our social media accounts, which hopefully will be ready shortly. Of course, those social media accounts are where you can join in on the conversation on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Fanboy Garage. You can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. And, you know, we are growing. We are doing some really cool things. So please thank you, as always, for your support. If you want to support us a little bit more, just do leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It goes a very, very long way, and we really do appreciate it. But in the meantime, we will catch you guys next week. Thanks, as always, for listening, and we'll see you later.